Well, hello, everyone.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon, wherever
yeah.
you may
good
be.
Morning.
You know what I realized as I was writing my notes today is that this is our 20th episode.
What?
It is.
20.
That feels special. I
mean, it does feel special.
I don't know what we'd do about it, but
I don't
it feels
either.
Special.
I mean, when I turned 20, I had way too many shots. And then
Wait. 20?
Excuse
that wasn't
me.
Legal.
I know.
Excuse me.
I know it wasn't. Eric bought me one of those shots, I think.
Mm,
yeah.
That sounds like the
I love that.
Yeah.
Type
actually.
Of illegal activity he would be into.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, when I was 20 it was blackout time. Mm-hmm. We're not gonna do that today. Mm-hmm. Not in celebration of
maybe
this.
Maybe not
20.
You.
Well, okay.
Keith and I already started.
You ready? Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Okay. I'm blacked out now.
This is going to be a real good one then.
That's
real
a good, point. Like, do you remember in your 20s being totally okay with getting blackout drunk?
Yeah, that extended into my 30s for
well,
me.
Yeah,
it was
yeah,
an
but,
issue.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, I was just saying, like, the yep. the hubris of like, and you could get up the next day.
Exactly.
If I did that now, fine. I'm looking at Wednesday.
Good.
But like, I like to do it with beer too. Like that takes
yes,
a lot,
right.
That takes
you're
a
right.
lot of time yeah. and effort and energy.
Yeah. Real concerted. Like uh-huh. I am going to do this.
Yeah.
And back in the day, we were drinking like Bud Light, which is, uh-huh. you know, mostly just piss and water. So, uh-huh. like, mm-hmm. it uh-huh. took a lot.
Mm-hmm. Or Zima.
Zima.
Good times. Mm-hmm. Good times. Well, anyway, we're 20. We're awesome. Mm-hmm. And this week we're talking about 1998. I was trying to think. I was not 20 in 1998. I was 21. I turned 21 in 1998.
Wow.
So, good story. Good story, everybody.
What did Eric do for you on your 21st birthday?
He probably partook in the, because I did the 21 pitchers for $21 at the Fieldhouse
oh,
at
nice.
Iowa City,
oh, nice.
Which I imagine that does not apply today, that financial
yeah.
arrangement.
Oof.
But
yeah.
Probably so not. Drank a lot of beer. Probably.
It's more like 2.1 pitchers for $21
probably.
Is probably what it is now.
Yeah.
Actually,
so
when you
think
there. About that, 21 pitchers of beer for $21.
Yeah.
I mean, you're dumb not to take advantage of that
right?
deal.
Yeah. It was like yeah. a legend in Iowa City. Like, when you turn 21, you can go do this. And I was like, fuck yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
That's I'm so excited
do.
For my 21 pitchers. That's so great because the Amy now, if I said, let's celebrate your birthday by getting 21 pitchers of beer for $21, I would fully expect to be backhanded.
I don't think I would go backhand, but I would give you a withering glance.
Yeah.
A hard
yeah.
shove.
Yeah. Hard shove. Or I would expect you to say something. You don't even know me. Leave.
Right. Right. Well, before we get into 1998,
ooh.
Shall we do like we always do, dive into our unmitigated gall
ooh,
from the last couple of weeks?
Yeah. For
who wants
sure.
to go first? This week I don't have a rant, so feel free because I know last time you
okay.
felt weird.
I want you to go first, Amy,
okay?
Because I need to calibrate.
That's I feel that.
Okay. Well, mine this week is sleep scientists.
Me too.
Remember last time when you were talking about like wind scientists?
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about I got sleep scientists.
Yeah.
Because did you see like what a couple of weeks ago? We've always been told 8 hours of sleep is the right number,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But it turned out a few weeks ago, some studies came out that they had never studied it on women. And that women need 9 hours of sleep
oh, no.
a night to function.
That
and then when you're on your
so
period,
much.
You need 10 hours
oh,
of sleep.
Oh, my God.
That explains so much
right?
about my life.
I mean, when you think about it, like women are the ones that always have chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, all the things that no one can explain. It's probably because we're not getting enough sleep.
I feel that especially hard today, but just
I'm
in
sorry.
General.
I'm sorry.
In general.
But also just the gall of sleep scientists to be like, nope, never studied it on a woman till 2024. We're good.
I'm speechless, which is it's so infuriating. I'm speechless.
Well, I mean, it's always something with women.
Right. You're right. You're right. You're right. I shouldn't expect anything more.
Oh
we're always bitching.
Always need more
all
sleep.
Of our weird body shit.
Oh, my God.
But doesn't that make a lot of sense?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
So, yeah, if you need to get 10 hours of sleep a night, then just
really
say you're on your period.
My night dynamic.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is comes out at the same time that all these, like, productivity experts are like,
right.
join the 5 a.m. club. Get
yeah,
up.
Fuck
it's this
you.
Early morning hour is going to, yeah, change your whole day.
They have some gall too. The productivity experts.
Yeah, fuck off.
They make no sense.
Expert. Yeah.
The grind, rise and grind guys.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyway, so you can fuck off, sleep scientists.
Yep. Fuck right off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about you, Heath? Have you calibrated?
I have calibrated.
Okay, great.
And I think I'll be okay.
Good.
My unmitigated gall this week is that I found out that I will someday be a stepfather this week.
Wait, what?
Henry Cavill got his girlfriend pregnant.
I know, I was like, what?
And since my destiny is to live with him in the English countryside.
Right.
I guess he's going to have a kid now, and I'm going to have to figure that out.
This is true. When I saw a post this week that said that he and his girlfriend were pregnant, I sent it to Heath. It's like, who is this bitch?
I actually saw that too, and I thought of both of you, but I wasn't sure exactly how to, like, I wasn't sure how tender you were both feeling. So I was like, I'm just not going to touch this, but my heart was going out to both of you. Like, this isn't news that they wanted.
Well, I mean, really to Heath, this is mm-hmm. Heath's love. Mm-hmm. I very much appreciate the man, mm-hmm. but you have been in love with this man for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it feels like your love got a slap in the face this week. Yeah.
You know, love's not perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, we all have hurdles to overcome. So,
including the fact that he seems to be straight.
Yeah,
bummer.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
He says that now.
That's true.
Yeah.
People change.
People change.
When they meet the right one.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, Henry Cavill's girlfriend, you're a bitch. And how dare you?
But you'll still be a stepfather to uh-huh. their child. That's
yes.
nice.
I will try to co-parent with you yeah. in a way that is respectful.
Mm-hmm.
But get your hands off my man.
I'll try to co-parent with you. I think that was as pleasant as you could have put it.
Yeah.
Well
yeah.
done.
I mm-hmm. like that.
Very restrained.
Mm-hmm. Very.
Yeah. I mean... listeners, you can't see it, but I did flip a table.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, it's true. We didn't mention that part because I wanted to give you your dignity. Yeah, but, you know,
sorry.
We had to edit out the sound, but uh-huh. it got violent for a minute.
It got violent. He just punched a hole in my wall. Uh-huh. It's yeah. fine.
It's fine.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's fine. My unmitigated gall this week is my 10-year-old.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Because somehow at 10, after having gotten a phone in March... He has somehow already perfected the art of not caring
oh.
about text messages or calls. And here's what is really getting me this week. When I call him, this is how he answers. Ring, ring. Yes.
He's answering like a CEO of a company.
Yes. Yes. He's at, like, he's boss baby. Like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I don't answer the phone yes. Mike doesn't answer the phone yes. Where did you even get this behavior? He's also taken to calling me mother.
Oh. Oh.
Which I had to put a strong stop to because it sounds like he's joking now because he knows it bugs me. He doesn't have the context for me to explain that when you do that out in public, people think of the Bates Motel. Like when you say mother.
Or that you're forcing him to say mother.
Yes.
That's the name yeah. you've chosen.
And yeah. he thinks it's hilarious. So now he's taken to answering the phone, yes, mother.
Oh, my God.
And I have to hang up. I have hung up on him multiple times because it shakes me to my core and I hate it. We also discovered this week that he is getting text messages but has perfected the art of reading them on the screen instead of opening them. So it looks like he never opens them, but he knows what's said because two of his older brothers called him out and said, I text you and you never text me back. And he said, I read it. And one of them said, what did you say? Or what did I say? And he told him what the text message said. And later, Mike and I looked at his phone and none of them are opened. He just reads them on the screen and then just chooses never to respond.
That is... some ballsy behavior.
Uh-huh. So ballsy.
It's advanced behavior.
It's advanced. And I'm a little jealous of it because the, like, to have that already, like, how?
I've read text messages to people from people and responded in my head and
yes.
then forgot to actually respond back.
I do that all the time. Yeah. I have typed it out and yeah. just not hit send. Uh-huh. And so then I go back in. I'm like, oh, I never sent that. It's just a draft.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's not even... He doesn't even feel like he needs to pretend that he responded. Mm. You just know.
Well,
wow.
So there's some gall there that on one hand I appreciate and on the other hand.
Yeah. It's a little scary.
Mm-hmm. It's scary, right?
But he's been known to scare you in
yeah.
the past.
Yeah. I mean, Mike and I frequently had discussions about like, are we sure that he's sleeping at night? And that he's not like building something in there that's going to be our mutual destruction? Like, what is happening with that one?
I mean, he seems to love you guys right now, so that's good.
He does. And he's, I know that sounds like he's a creeper by all this behavior with the yes mother, but he really isn't. He's funny hilarious. And very sweet, but just doesn't understand that you can't answer the phone with yes.
Can I do a cat check-in with Mason?
Yeah.
Where's he at on his obsessions with cats?
Still top.
Still there?
Still
this
top.
Has been oh, years.
Wow. I will tell you that this he does have some runner-ups now.
Okay.
It used to be cat 1, 2, 3
sure.
as his top animal. It's cat, axolotl.
Who?
Slid in there too.
Axolotl?
Mm-hmm. He did a deep dive because Blank Park Zoo is adding a whole axolotl.
What's an axolotl?
It's a sea creature that looks kind of like a flattened platypus kind of thing. It's got little... Yeah.
That?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
This looks like a sea alien.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a big fan.
It looks like a popple.
I think...
It's a sea popple.
It's a sea popple. We're going to call him Pretty Bit. Yeah. Axolotl. And then in the last place, it's a tie between giraffes and corgis.
Oh, wow.
Giraffes
and corgis.
Yeah, he likes both of them.
I mean, so. I'm glad that he loves animals still.
He does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does. And he's, yeah, a big fan still of the cats. So
good. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just checking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I have no doubt that if you called him, he wouldn't answer yes. He'd be like, hello. Because you have everything that he wants in life.
I have cats in the backyard. Yeah, so he's like, I'm the coolest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
He has frequently told me that Amy's the best because she lives alone.
Yeah.
So, which I don't know how to take that since I'm your roommate. She has cats. He just thinks it's the perfect setup, which he's not wrong.
He's hit on all the benefits.
Right, yeah.
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 Yep.
He really has. Mm-hmm. And he likes that I have raccoons every once in a while, too.
Yes, he loves the raccoon content. Yeah. Yeah. Loves a raccoon. Mm-hmm.
See, this is, I'm glad I'm cool to somebody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we're
at. Well, good job, Mason. Mm-hmm. Creeping you guys and creeping all of us out.
Mm-hmm. This week when I tried to explain to him why you can't say yes, he used...
It's better than him answering the phone and saying no, though.
Yeah, right? That's fair. That's fair.
Or what?
Yeah, what? No, it's just yes. He used something back at me that was... We've been watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine with him at night, and just like an episode before bed, and he said, I feel like that's how Captain Holt would answer the phone. And I was like, oh.
Damn it, that's true.
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
And he was talking about efficiency specifically.
Is that where the love of corgis comes from? Uh-huh. Is Captain Holt? Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, I thought it was Queen Elizabeth.
No. Okay. He has no interest in. Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, so. I mean, this shows that kids pick up what they mm-hmm. watch on TV. Shit.
Yeah.
This will be good information for me when I'm raising Henry Cavill's child.
Yeah, it is. Yes.
Thank you.
Oh, my God. This is true. Everything that Aaron talks about parenting now, you're going to have to really absorb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe I should be jotting some quick notes.
You should. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the last note will just be none of this applies. Because...
What advice do you have for co-parenting for Heath?
Ooh, you know.
Especially
a good, strong weed gummy.
Especially when two of them are vying for the same.
Yeah, that's right. That's tough.
That's
going to
be a problem.
That's a new situation for me. I don't know.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to need an update every week on, you know, how this is going.
I and think so.
How we're going to engineer the meet cute with Henry Cavill. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you already have
that engineered? I feel like you might.
No, I mean, I assume it's going to be him coming home and finding me in his house.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's super cute. I hope you're Instagram living the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay, so should we coordinate with Michael about bail money? Or
I mean, I got to get him up to speed on this. He doesn't know about this.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he knows about your love for Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
Not the plan to infiltrate his home.
All I really want him to do is find me and be like, well, you're already in my bed.
Yeah. Might as well just come in. You know, remember how that random guy said that if you worked out, you'd look like Superman?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, as we said, you already look like Superman. Uh-huh. He played Superman. Yeah. This is a connection.
Maybe he is super vain and narcissistic and just be like, you know, you look kind of like me.
Exactly.
So I'm into it.
Yes.
Yes.
I will fuck someone who looks like me and fall in love with that person.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
Mm-hmm. It's tremendous. I'll help.
Should we do a crowdfunding for your airfare?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I like that. Uh-huh. Oh, I can't wait to write the copy for that.
I know. If some week Heath isn't present for our recording, we'll know why.
We'll know why.
Yeah.
And, well, we won't be either. I think we'd have to support him in this endeavor.
Well, yeah, we would be there. We'd be in. Wait, where does he live? LA? London?
London.
Okay. We would be in London, recording in London, live from a jail cell.
Oh, okay.
Or
I went, you and I in walkie-talkies in the car with Heath. And then after a certain point, we're like, and we've lost him. It's worked. And we get to go have tea and biscuits or something.
He's got money, though. I mean, I could, you know, someday I'll be able to afford to fly you guys over there.
That's a good point. And maybe he'll love you so much, he'll set up a podcast studio in his house.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I've seen the video of him putting together a computer in a tank top.
Right?
So he can, I mean, he's technically savvy.
Ooh, yeah, he can help us.
Wow. So much good stuff coming in the future.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Well, should we return to 1998 before you knew of the love of your life?
Yes. I think so. Yeah.
So, hey, remember the saga of the VCR? And remember how the head of the Motion Picture Industry Association freaked out? Uh-huh. And then, remember he said, I say to you. And then he likened the VCR to, like, serial killers entering single women's homes.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we've got the saga of the MP3 player in 1998.
Oh, yes.
It's not nearly as wild as the VCR, there's some similarities. Okay. So March 10th, there's a German trade fair, and the first mass-produced portable MP3 player is launched. Mm. It's made in South Korea. It's called MP Man.
Is there an exclamation point in there?
No, there should be. I put that in there.
Okay, okay.
It's really called MP Man?
MP Man, yep.
Oh, is that supposed to be like Disc Man, you think?
I think so, yeah.
Okay,
Disc Person.
This was 1998. This was before.
All right.
Before, you know, gender was discovered and, you know, all of that.
Gender was discovered. Yeah.
Before probably by anyone ever questioned their
definitely
gender.
Not by a sleep scientist
or a wind scientist or a windologist. So anyway, the MP Man, it cost $250. Mm.
Oof.
It had room for about 8 songs.
Shoot.
Oh. And it had a
not even a whole CD.
That's a heavy price tag for 8 songs.
8 songs. So because it had that heavy price tag and little, you know, flash memory, it didn't sell very well. Mm. But it was significant enough that the head of a U.S. company called Diamond Multimedia flew out to South Korea and stole the team.
Oh, no.
Like, said, hey, guys, this didn't work well. Come work for me. We'll make one better. Stole the team.
I want that movie, just like the Nike shoe movie. I want that guy from Diamond Multimedia.
Diamond Multimedia.
Played by Leonardo DiCaprio.
So over the next few months, apparently they the design team looked at a few designs that they hadn't made, and they're like, "Oh, this one might work."
Okay.
So they made the Rio PMP300.
Nope. Mm. I hate the name.
They should have called it the Rio MP300 Man.
It was slightly bigger and a little less money, $200, but it was poised to be like, "Okay, this is going to be the hot new thing." Mm. Then in October of that year, the Recording Industry Association of America, they tried to block the release in court. They asked for an injunction because they said it's, you know, piracy, anti-copyright, all the things.
Mm-hmm.
And during the hearings, lawyers for Diamond Multimedia argued that Rio didn't violate any rules because it was akin to a roach motel.
Oh.
The music... Quote,
wow, didn't see that as a marketing plan. Okay.
Quote, the music checks in, but it can't check out.
Oh. So you can only put your 8 songs on it and that's it? Like you had to choose wisely the songs you wanted on it? You couldn't take them back
off? I guess. I mean, I don't understand the logic of that statement at all.
Are they saying that if you put, okay, so if Heath has the Rio whatever, uh-huh. Rio man, and he puts 8 songs on it, he can't then somehow give those 8 songs to me? Like he has to own.
I think that was part of it. Like they didn't want any passing back and forth. Right. They didn't want any further like piracy.
Right.
Really, they just weren't ready to be selling MP3s. Yeah. And so they were freaking out, like, how are we going to make money off of this?
It's wild that their course of action was to sue them to stop producing it and not just figure out how to sort of harness that.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. They did not see the future, obviously. Diamond Multimedia also argued that the Rio offered other consumer benefits, especially like, you know, hey, music's not going to skip like it does in a portable Discman.
Oh, sure.
And the judge of the case was like, yeah, quote, I can imagine using it while I am vacuuming.
While vacuuming.
Yeah, yeah.
Wild. Yeah. Okay.
So because of that, apparently the judge was like, this is great. I want to vacuum and I want to put this on. So the judge said, nope. Recording Industry Association, you're wrong.
Because the judge wanted one real bad. Okay. Yeah.
Said that the MP3 player represents, it does not represent a music piracy device. And so they were on, you know, store shelves not long after this, cleared the way for MP3s. And then in 2001, iPod came out and changed the world.
Mm-hmm.
But these were the baby steps. And again, the Recording Association, just like the Movie Association, freaked out, used lawsuits, said real weird stuff. And just didn't think ahead.
So in addition to our marketing meeting segment, we need a lawyer meeting. Uh-huh.
We need court case.
A law
discussion plan.
Yeah. And this one was centered around the idea that it is a Roach Motel.
Yes.
Yep. And that feels very much like something that we got at 2 a.m. Yeah. After 21 pitchers for $21.
Exactly.
It's a Roach Motel. That's what we'll say.
Like that, people will just get
so
it.
Profound.
Yeah, truly. Uh-huh. And exactly what I want someone to think of when I'm trying to sell a product.
I
want to
think about roaches when
checking
I'm listening.
Checking in and not checking out.
Yeah.
I also feel like I don't want to keep dwelling on the judge. But
I do.
I feel like that judge didn't, like, that judge must have had a housekeeper and they must vacuum, like, recreationally.
Yeah, they're like, this is going to be so fun.
Right, yeah. They're not doing it because they need to because it's work. You know, they're doing it just for a good time.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Which is psychotic.
It is psychotic, and then also like showing your hand, like if you're saying, you know, like, oh my god, that's right, this could be cool, and then it's obvious you want to run out and get one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it feels like they set up a great appeals case of bias because the judge was like, oh, I'd like one.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
apparently the lawyers didn't get that far. They weren't thinking that far, because then and apparently Apple was taking note, because they were like, well, okie doke,
all right,
I see your Rio PMP300 and I am gonna raise you an iPod.
PMP300, I gotta write that down. Rio PMP300. That almost spells pimp.
It oh my god, you're right.
It's a real mouthful.
It made me think, who sang that song? PIMP. Whatever. There was a song that he was it Biggie?
You know, when you said, like, the songs, I think there was even, it was either this model or another real model where it came where songs were already preloaded and it was, like, songs that weren't hits, you know? So it was almost like maybe they had come to an arrangement with somebody. But, yeah, you would get, like, something preloaded with music. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but then you couldn't, like, change it.
But that just seems like something like your grandma would buy for you for Christmas, not
oh
knowing.
Oh, my God, totally.
Like, you know, thinking she was getting something cool and, like, you weren't getting anything cool.
Be like an end cap at Kmart.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And at this time, Napster was already starting up, so there was a lot of concerns, you know. And so it makes sense that they were a little concerned, but it also doesn't make sense that they weren't thinking forward about this. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, well, people are interested in this. Somehow we should find some way to capitalize on it. And then they were, what, years too late to really help the music industry?
Yeah.
You fucked up, dudes.
Yeah, you just didn't quite execute on that level.
All right, Heath, what do you got from 98?
In 1998, a TV show came to an end, and that TV show was Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. The last episode of Seinfeld aired on May 14th of 1998. And 76 million people watched that episode of television.
Holy I was shit. One of them.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was wild.
76 million.
Anyone who might not be familiar with the show, I mean, you probably are if you're listening to this. Jerry Seinfeld is kind of a fictionalized version of himself. And then his friend George, his former girlfriend Elaine, and his kooky neighbor Kramer kind of get up to shenanigans on the show. And it was created by Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David, who also created Curb Your Enthusiasm, which just wrapped up its 12-season run just a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, this I have kind of a controversial opinion about this. But I think Seinfeld was maybe a little more clever than a lot of the bros who like to watch it.
Yeah.
1,000%.
Yeah, for sure.
I agree with that.
I think the bro community, as I have dubbed them, mostly liked it because the show was sort of famously non-sentimental.
Yeah.
Like lots of sitcoms of the time were sentimental. And I know the bro community is often non-sentimental. You know? I also believe that at least half of the bro audience only understood about 65% of what was going on.
Yeah.
That's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they did a really nice job of sort of, there'd be like two or three separate storylines and yes. they'd all kind of wrap up together by the end of the episode. And I don't think those dudes got it. I just really don't.
I think a lot of stuff went over the bros' heads. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So over the course of the show's run, Jerry and his friends encounter a whole host of memorable characters. In one episode titled The Implant, Jerry is dating Sidra, who's played by Terry Hatcher. And Elaine thinks she has breast implants, prompting Jerry to break up with her. Elaine eventually discovers that Sidra's breasts are not augmented. She does this in the sauna at the health club. And, you know, Jerry regrets breaking up with her. And when Sidra finds out why Jerry broke up with her, she's pissed, you know. And she kind of famously leaves his apartment, says, I think they're real and they're fabulous.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. And so most people they've heard of the soup Nazi from Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. And he runs a soup cafe and is very particular about how his customers place their orders. And Jerry and his girlfriend are refused service when they're caught kissing while waiting in line for soup. Meanwhile, Kramer's watching an armoire for Elaine while it's on the street as it's getting moved into her home, but he lets the armoire get stolen by some mean gays.
Oh, the mean gay community was represented. Uh-huh. That's good.
Yep. So when Kramer replaces the armoire with a new one for Elaine, she finds the soup Nazi's recipes in it. And when the soup Nazi is rude to her, she threatens to kind of put him out of business. That's how, you know. And then maybe the most famous episode of Seinfeld is The Contest. And that's the one where they all make a bet to see who can go the longest without masturbating.
Uh-huh.
The phrase master of my domain was sort of popularized during this episode. And when Jerry mentions the contest in passing to his girlfriend Marla, who is a virgin, and she's played by Jane Leaves, who is on Frasier. Mm-hmm. She's disgusted and breaks up with him. And as a virgin, she must be against not masturbating, I guess. I don't know. I don't know why. Yeah.
Why is he dating a virgin, first off?
I don't think he knew that when they started dating.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So anyway, all the people they've pissed off in all these episodes of the show and the rest of the series, they show up in the Seinfeld finale when Jerry, George, Elaine, and Kramer are on trial for breaking the Good Samaritan law in a small town in Massachusetts. And all the people they've wronged over the course of the series show up to testify against them and they end up going to jail. That's kind of how, I mean, spoiler alert, sorry, but that's how it goes. That's how the series ended. And the episode is...
Spoiler alert. 1998. 26 years later.
I hate this podcast. It ruins everything.
And the episode was written by Larry David, and not many people liked the episode. Yeah. It's been called, quote, downright awful and off-key and bloated. So Larry David, being the curmudgeon that he is, basically used the same plot for the series finale of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Did he really?
Yes.
That's kind of amazing.
And, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that was his sort of middle finger to everybody who said the Seinfeld finale was no good. But, you know, I mean, I guess we're still talking about the Seinfeld finale.
We're still talking about it.
I mean, he must have done something right.
Have we, like, re-looked at that? Because I feel like... Now, looking back, that was the perfect end to it, that all these assholes
I was just thinking that.
got sort of karma, you know, at the end. But at the time, I remember watching it and thinking, like, what? That's the end?
Yeah.
I do think, I mean, I know I talked about how it was famously non-sentimental, but I think that's what people expected, was there was going to be something like, you know, usually when a series ends, like, you know, the characters all move away because, I, you know, I feel like the writers and creators, like, they don't want you to think these people are still hanging out and you're just not watching anymore,
right.
You know?
Right.
They all have to kind of separate.
Yeah. So that's pretty smart when looking back on it. So did you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I watched most of it. I didn't see every episode. But
you saw the finale?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the finale?
It was good. I unfortunately just, I didn't try to find this out, but like a month or two ago, I had read that someone was suggesting that's kind of where it was going.
Okay.
So it would have been better had I not known anything about it and just been able to pick up on it on your own. But
I always thought it was interesting that they marketed that show as a show about nothing.
Yeah.
But yet you're like, well, it feels like almost a nod to the bro community. It's a show about nothing.
Yes. Yeah, so you don't have to work too hard. You just can sit and which is it's much more complex.
Uh-huh. Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. I was surprised when we were doing research for this episode that it ended in 1998. Because for some reason, I think I watched so much of it in syndication, too, that it seemed like it went on so much longer than that. I was surprised that that was the year that it ended.
I do remember when the episode aired, though. Like, a friend of mine was graduating from college, and I like, didn't go to the party because I stayed home to watch the episode. And now, like, I mean, I don't love going to parties, you know, all that. You know, I mean, I like them well enough. Yeah, but, like, any excuse to stay home now, I'd take it. But then I was just like, it was a different time, you guys. Like, now you'd go and it would be streaming, you know, the next day. You'd be able to watch it whenever you wanted to. But
no, this was appointment television.
Well, that 76 million tells you that. Yeah. I mean, you didn't have.
It's a lot of people saying no to parties that night.
Uh-huh. There was. You're right. Well, 1998 brought us something that I don't think many of us are aware of.
Oh, boy.
Or at least our collective memories have forgotten.
HPV?
Yeah. That. Yes, absolutely. HPV. But also, before Bennifer 1 and 2, before Mark Anthony and P. Diddy, came Ojani Noah, who was J-Lo's first husband.
Uh-huh. Who?
Noah. Exactly. Who is the exact right answer? Who? Ojani Noah.
Okay. She's been married so many times.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. He was a waiter. They met at... Oh, wait. I have a visual aid.
Oh, good.
Just in case wanted to know. Yeah. Okay.
Oh.
Which we'll post, of course, but...
I mean, he's attractive.
Yeah. They met at Gloria Estefan's restaurant in Miami, where he was a waiter.
Oh.
They were engaged at the rat party for Selena when she was done. It lasted only 11 months. They got divorced in 1998 because she wanted a career.
What? Was he just going to be the breadwinner as a waiter at Gloria's?
Yeah, I don't know what he thought he was getting into. I mean, you literally got engaged at the rat party for Selena, but
yeah.
And you know, J-Lo has her own things that we could talk about, but
that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah. He did some kind of out there things at the time. He went on to sue her because he worked/ran one of her restaurants. And it turns out that working for your ex-wife comes with some conflict. Uh-huh. And he felt like his employment was terminated because it was his ex-wife, which, probably.
Probably.
But he sued her. But in that process, he was vocal about the fact that he had a sex tape of them that he was going to release if she didn't meet his demands. J-Lo, being J-Lo, was like, okay, and just continued with the court case and said, go ahead and release it, and it never materialized. So there's like kind of thought process of whether it ever actually did exist or...
So he was trying for revenge porn before it was a thing.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yep. And that didn't come out.
Oh,
he then went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was trying.
He was trying.
He was doing all the comeuppance things.
Yes.
He went on to date a Telemundo TV producer after that.
That sounds right.
Who wanted to produce multiple different shows centered around their relationship. Like, How I Married J-Lo was like the title of one.
Wait. The Telemundo producer wanted to do multiple shows about her husband's
I don't know if they were ever married, but like her long-term boyfriend's.
Her long-term boyfriend's past relationship?
Mm-hmm. With J-Lo. Mm-hmm. Like,
that's...
Pitched multiple ideas, and one was greenlit until J-Lo got an injunction. It was like, absolutely not. You're not doing that. We're not. This isn't
a
thing.
What the hell?
Yeah. So, and the injunction was enough that it shut down any other options he had to, like, release anything. I think at one point he said he was going to release a book, all these things, and no, it didn't come to fruition. So I can imagine that these 11 months were something. That you felt like you had so much material.
Apparently.
To go this far.
But also, like, I mean, he must have been getting alimony or something. Like, she must have been paying him. Yeah. Like, why?
I'm sure there was a settlement or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, but why are you trying to shake her down for more?
Because more money, he realized, oh, shit, I let my meal ticket go.
Yeah. Because I was frustrated that she wanted to continue, like, working.
Being my meal ticket.
I mean, that basically, that's the kind of reports or news stories at the time say that the arguments were about the fact that, like, she had to do things to further her career, you know, travel a lot, be gone. And he was like, this isn't a way to sustain a marriage.
Like, dude, again, you knew who she was. Yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, it's not like you guys were dating and she was no one and then she got Selena and you're like, this isn't a life I wanted. Like, you.
She was a fly girl.
Yeah, she was a fly girl. Yeah, and she was obviously further enough in her career that she owned a restaurant.
Yeah.
That you then ran, so, like, you knew that she had...
Wow.
Also, like, I mean, he could have just gone with her, right? When she went away on shoots and stuff. Yeah. Like, I mean, Gloria Estefan would have given him the time off.
Yes.
Too. She was a fair employer.
Yeah. She's a benevolent leader.
She's in the industry. She gets it.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Wow. Well, what an enterprising young fellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just love that was going on in 1998. It's sort of... I don't know if I knew that as much as, like, I think I knew she was married before, but I wouldn't have been able to point that guy out and say that was him.
So this was pre-Diddy as well?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Because it was this guy and then it was Chris Judd, right? The dancer.
Yep.
They got married?
They did, didn't they? Yeah.
And then I think she was with Diddy for a while.
But and they didn't get married.
I think it was Ben Affleck and then Mark Anthony.
I was going to say, was there Mark Anthony, Ben Affleck, Mark Anthony, Ben Affleck? Or was it just Ben Affleck, Mark Anthony, Ben Affleck?
Well, she had to be with somebody between Mark Anthony and Ben Affleck, right, recently. I don't know. She's been married a lot.
She has been, yeah.
Well, there was another dancer she was either engaged or married to, wasn't there? More recently? Yeah, or maybe I'm confusing.
No, I think you're right. Else.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah.
That was a element of the past I'd either not known or... Yeah. Blocked out.
Well, yeah. I don't know why. You know.
I was drinking a lot, apparently, as we know. So I was blacking out.
So and... I just also, there's a part of me that, like, some part of me that in a different life wants to be a life coach, maybe, that wanted to, like, sit him down and be like, so you got in another relationship, and then you made that relationship about your past relationship. Huh. It's an interesting choice.
It almost feels like the new relationship with the Telemundo producer was like, that was what she liked about him, was that he used to date J-Lo.
Yes. It very much felt that way.
This is a story.
Yeah. Because there were two different programs that she was going to produce. And I don't know, one didn't really go anywhere and the second one did. And that's when J-Lo had to get an injunction and be like, no, we're done. Because he was going to use like old home movies and like clips of her that he had. And then I'm supposed to tell his story. And it was like very weird, like how I got J-Lo or how I married J-Lo. Like it.
Like he wanted to be a dating coach. Kind of. Before the age of TikTok dating coaches.
Yeah. Cool. And also like you're not with her anymore. So the story kind of already has its... conclusion.
Mm-hmm. She's probably already married again at that point.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that trip down memory lane.
You're welcome. I thought
you
might like that.
So my next one, do you remember a fellow named Jesse Camp?
I do.
I don't.
Jesse Camp won MTV's I Want to Be a VJ contest in 1998.
Okay.
He entered that contest and portrayed himself as homeless and projected the image of a street kid.
Oh, no.
But then it was discovered pretty quickly he'd been raised and attended private school in Connecticut.
I also, not to interrupt, but also this was the first, this was what America learned. We can't be trusted to make good decisions.
We cannot be trusted. But also, apparently, the Village Voice reported that there may have been tomfoolery in the election because... There was a
were the Russians involved?
Yes.
Oh no!
There was a source on the internet known as Ugly Pig who claimed to have cast over 3,000 votes for Camp in the contest.
Mm.
So, however it happened, whether it's through Ugly Pig and the Soviets, or whether it's through just Jesse
Ugly
Camp's
Pig and the Soviets.
winning personality
show title, yeah. Ugly Pig and the Soviets.
Jesse Camp beat the fellow contestant, Dave Holmes, who then later on became a legit VJ.
Okay.
But Jesse was the winner this year. So Jesse Camp was pretty popular on the channel at the time. And there's a lovely quote from Rolling Stone that explains who he was and his appeal. An unlikely instant star, he was soon adored by preteen fans who crowded around him devotedly as he paraded through Times Square in feather boas, leather trousers, sparkly Steven Tyler scarves, and mismatched leg warmers during his wacky Man on the Street segments for MTV.
So he did the kitschy costume thing and that got him. Okay.
I want us all to look at a picture of Jesse Camp. Yes, please. All right, so here's some images of Jesse Camp with his super spiky hair, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So was it a scandal when it came out that he wasn't homeless?
It wasn't a scandal enough to cost him the job or anything, because then for about a year, he hosted a few shows, like a few daytime shows. Yeah. Apparently, he co-hosted a bit of Total Request Live, TRL, which also debuted this year. But then after a year, I don't know if the tenure of the contest was done or he just, you know, moved on, or they were like, yeah, this kid, no.
Yeah.
After that, he created an album.
Oh, did he now?
And it was called Jesse and the 8th Street Kids with a Z. It was 1980s style glam metal. And the weirdest thing, perhaps, is that there were a few guest stars on the album.
Oh,
one
no.
of them being Stevie Nicks.
What?
Oh, wow.
Who duetted with Jesse Camp on a ballad, My Little Savior. I didn't do the legwork of, you know, also I didn't want to fuck with my algorithm too much to try and listen to him on Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of that. Want to keep my algorithm pure.
Yeah.
I
assume that was like a Stevie Nicks were trying to appeal to the youth and
I
get
guess.
You more.
Probably. I feel an agent or manager like gave her
Force
bad
that.
Advice.
But I'm really curious like what his singing level was, and you know, like it had to be good enough for her to at least entertain the idea, right? Like, I don't know. Anyway, Jesse and the 8th Street Kids, I don't remember it now, so it obviously wasn't a classic album.
When you said Kids with a Z, it made me think of Kids Bop.
Right?
When
me too. Yep.
Yeah.
So then, you know, he just sort of disappeared from view. The only other thing of note from him is that in 2018, he was reported missing by his sister.
Oh, shit.
To a police department. She stated he'd been out of the contact with his family for about a week, which was unusual. But then they just saw him later when a bike patrol officer made a pedestrian check outside of a Sherwin-Williams store. And he was fine.
Just buying paint.
Just buying paint.
Just buying paint.
It's like, Jesus, why are you calling the cops on me?
Yeah.
Just buying some paint for my homeless shelter that I live in, even though I was a private school kid.
Yeah, that feels like that part of the story really got buried.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow. When you showed me the picture, I absolutely remembered it, but I wouldn't have been able to place that without
But he didn't. I mean, obviously, it was just a very quick, you know, blip on the pop culture radar. But Dave Holmes, like, had a long, long career on MTV, didn't he? Yeah.
And there's still a lesson there, isn't there?
Apparently.
Dave Holmes still hosts stuff. And
does he? Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh. He was, like, a legit. I do want to be a VJ.
Yeah.
And Jesse Camp was like, look at me.
In fairness, though, I mean, like, being a VJ doesn't, like, there's no formal training for that.
Very true. Very true.
Yeah.
And there's a whole variety of people that are really into music and then people that really just want to be celebrity adjacent.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, Jesse Camp.
Jesse Camp.
1998 was his year.
Getting it.
Yeah. So, what you got, Heath?
Let's talk about a movie.
Let's do
from
it.
1998.
Oh,
that
movie film?
Is called City of Angels.
Whoa!
Stars Nicolas Cage. He plays Seth, an angel who watches over humans, and then he also appears to them right before they die, so he can guide them into the next realm. And I feel like what a real, you know, kick to the nuts that Nicolas Cage might be the last person you see before you die.
Facts. That's awful.
And then it made me wonder, like, you know, recent events. I wonder, like, was Nicolas Cage the last thing OJ saw before he died recently?
Oh, wow. That'd be fitting.
Yeah. I mean, I will say I'd rather see Nicolas Cage on my way out than OJ Simpson.
Good God, yeah.
Because, I mean, we know
Cage all the way.
There's at least two people in the OJ was the last person I saw before I died club.
Uh-huh.
And we don't need more.
Nope.
That's, no.
That's
nope,
more than
no.
enough.
Yeah, that's that'll make you believe in religion, I something
like not
some
not
sort
in
of
a good
evil,
way.
Not yeah, not in a good way, in
yeah,
a
yeah,
fearing
yeah.
way,
yeah.
So Seth is loitering at a hospital, waiting for his next assignment, and he starts crushing on Maggie Rice, who's played by Meg Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to know if the matching initials was intentional. I spent a lot of time searching on the internet this week to try
to find
out.
What was her character name?
Maggie Rice.
Maggie Rice and Meg Ryan, of course.
Yeah. It feels like I'm so sort of similar.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I don't see how that could just be a coincidence, mm-hmm. but the internet can't confirm it. So Seth, you know, again, Nicolas Cage, it really floats his boat that she's upset that her patient dies, and it feels kind of gross to me that he's attracted to upset women. Yes.
That might be a red flag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels
so
predatory.
Beautiful when you're crying.
Yeah, yes. It feels like that like guy trope of like, you're vulnerable and I'm into it.
Yes.
Uh-huh. It's also concerning that Maggie is already seeing someone else. So for an angel, Seth is certainly kind of a creep.
Yeah, he's an adultering creep.
Uh-huh. Seth meets Nathaniel, who's one of Maggie's patients that she didn't kill, and explains that he used to be an angel. He tells Seth that, just like humans, angels have free will, and if Seth wants to, he could become a human and go be with Maggie, right? Because again, he just assumes this lady is just like waiting for him to show
up. Yeah. No question.
Definitely.
So Seth jumps off a skyscraper, because apparently that's how you change from an angel to a human, mm-hmm. which seems dramatic to me. Then he goes to the hospital to find Maggie, and the hospital staff just tell this stranger that she's at her uncle's cabin at Lake Tahoe. They just let him know. I mean, you know, a gay man couldn't go and see his partner who was in the hospital at this time because they weren't married.
But this guy looks straight. Right. Yeah. Let's give him the info.
Yeah.
So while trying to get to Lake Tahoe, he gets mugged. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's a real disappointment. That must have been for the mugger to pick somebody with no money. I mean, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's a fatal flaw when you try to mug a human
who was just an angel that just that's God. Tough. That's
didn't have
a
any
tough.
Currency. Yeah. No credit.
Damn it. Mm-mm.
So he eventually hitches a ride and makes his way to Maggie's uncle's cabin. And she realizes that he has become mortal for her, and they do it. For me, this is the height of coming on too strong.
Yes.
Like, I would have run 100 miles in the opposite direction if someone showed up at my door and said, you became mortal for me.
Fuck you, no, like, I'm out.
I can't.
This is too much.
Also, because I was raised Catholic, in Catholicism, we believe that there's... Wow, we don't.
I was going to say, I just took
sorry.
The royal we.
Yeah, sorry. God. That's not true. I do not. That there's purgatory, and if you were not quite good enough to get into heaven, but not quite bad enough, or you have like unfinished business, you'll be in purgatory, which is what the category Seth would fall in, which means like not a good guy before he became an angel. Like we couldn't bump him up, but we couldn't have a like he didn't kill someone yet, so we didn't have like a definitive reason to send him to hell.
Huh.
So when you put that context around it, odd.
They knew he was a creep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But this movie, I mean, it makes it sound like he was never a person to begin with.
Yeah.
But even then, it's like, how did you learn to be a creep?
Yeah. By watching people.
Right. You're not, I mean, people aren't born creeps, right? Like, you got, that's learned behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, are some people born creeps?
Probably.
Yeah.
George Santos was born a creep.
Oh, yeah.
Most Republicans were born creeps.
Yeah, for sure. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Kim Reynolds.
I was going to say, Marjorie Taylor Greene
in DNA. I think that's a compliment to call her just a creep.
That's a good point. That's fair. Yeah. There's creep and then there's just bad person. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So the next morning, while Seth is in the shower, Maggie rides her bike to the store, as one does in Lake Tahoe.
After a night of sex.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. On her way back, she's so happy that she rides her bike with her eyes closed and her arms open and then gets run over by a logging truck because you can't just ride your bike around with your eyes closed, dummy.
Nope.
That's what happens.
That scene, though, too. Don't you think you'd hear a goddamn logging truck?
You'd think
you would think
so.
Yeah. But after sex with an angel, I mean, all your senses are whacked.
That's
you know?
True. That's like, true.
She was touched by an angel and she...
Must not have been that good because she's riding a bike. Well,
good point. That's a flaw in the logic. You're right.
Uh-huh.
Scooter, maybe. But...
Maybe she was right. Maybe she was riding the bike and she was like, come on, angel, another angel. Send me down someone better. Because he was unsatisfactory.
It was not satisfying.
Because I can ride my bike.
I can ride my bike.
Maybe that's why she was riding the bike. She was like, I need satisfaction from somebody.
Yeah. He did not pay attention to me at all. And also, he was real fast because it was his first time.
Honestly, that was like he's never done it
before. Yeah, that's another good point,
right?
too. Yeah, you're not good your first
bad.
Time.
Yeah.
Oh,
boy. way.
Plus, you're just getting used to your human form.
Oh, man.
You became human for me, and now I have to teach you, too? This is too much.
I'm not responsible for you.
What a nightmare.
Okay.
So Seth rushes to her aid and tells her to ignore any angels that may be nearby. Again, red flag, telling her what to do.
You're right.
She says that when the angels ask her what her favorite thing in life was, she will tell them it was Seth, which cannot be true because she was doing okay and then shut up and now she's under a truck on the side of the road.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what... Seth's pretty sad for a while, but later celebrates being alive by running into the ocean because the ocean's never hurt anybody, right?
He hasn't heard about sharks yet.
No.
So, yeah.
Good luck, Demi.
Yeah.
The movie's pretty nuts, but the soundtrack's kind of perfect.
Yeah, that Alanis Morissette song.
Yeah.
Yeah, Uninvited.
Yeah.
Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls.
Yeah.
Oh, a pre-animal cruelty Angel by Sarah McLachlan. Uh-huh.
Pre-animal cruelty.
Yep.
And I will say, I was at a party once, and a guy was trying to hook up with a girl, and he just kept playing Iris over and over again. And I felt like that was something that Seth, the former angel, would have encouraged and or tried himself.
Yeah, and hopefully that girl was like, Jesus Christ, I gotta get out of here.
Hopefully that girl saw the Barbie movie and was like, yes, that's been done to me.
Yes.
Wow.
I feel like we really understand the movie differently now,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Because, they really marketed it as a very romantic thing. And, and when you kind of take a step back and look at it, it's like, this isn't romantic.
It's not. Which is true of so many 80s and 90s movies.
Uh-huh. So many.
All the things that they're portraying as romance taught us that.
Right.
Yeah. No wonder we've survived a lot of trauma.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the idea that it's romantic to become human, track me down, and then I have no choice but to have sex with you.
Yeah, and it's going to be real bad sex.
Like you said, now that would be... so alarming that,
And I mean, he was spying on her for weeks before he ever met her. You know, I mean, it was
maybe she did the right thing under the truck. It was like, the best thing about my life is you, because she was like, you're gonna kill me.
Right. Yes,
I'm not gonna survive this. Like,
if we did a version that was from her perspective, it'd be a horror movie.
Uh-huh. Yes.
It'd be a thriller. Like, yeah, like that's trying to point. Escape, mm-hmm. and then just a devastating end where she can't escape.
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it. Okay. Well. I'm going to follow City of Angels with some FCC content.
Oh, bring it.
Yes. The Federal Communications Commission got serious in 1998.
Yeah, they did.
It wasn't a wardrobe malfunction.
Oh.
Or a nip slip or anything like that that they were pissed about. It was pirated radio stations in Miami.
Oh.
They said enough.
Very specific.
Enough.
Florida pirates.
Yeah. How dare you? How dare you? Put on a radio station that is not part of the broadcast network. And they did a crackdown and they were proud of it. They shut down 15 radio stations in July of 1998.
So somebody really hated Florida and they were like, we're going to make a case study of this?
Well, basically the FCC guy said it was because it's really flat. So it was easy to pirate radio stations there. The broadcast went really far without any help.
Okay.
Which seems like he didn't, like, he wasn't the guy you should have interviewed.
I was gonna say, that doesn't sound like science. That doesn't. Okay.
No.
He's not a radio scientist.
Nope. So essentially, a pirated radio station means that the broadcasters set up their own equipment and take the airwaves.
Like Christian Slater and pump up the volume.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And they were known for airing techno and dance music. So it was just a bunch of kids trying to have a rave.
Yeah.
But the FCC was like, not on my watch, because...
Wait. Is this the plot of Footloose?
It might be.
Maybe they saw Footloose and were inspired.
Oh, yeah.
Like, we are a federal agency. We can actually
do this. What I really like about this story is how much they trotted it out as a success. Because the chairman, William Henard, called the crackdown the most successful large-scale enforcement action against unlicensed operators to date.
Ooh.
This commission has enforced and will continue to vigorously...
Good
enforce
Lord.
The law against unlicensed broadcasters. And everyone was like, why?
And sounds right. like they had unsatisfying sex with an angel and uh-huh. they really needed to take it out on uh-huh. somebody. So they're like, Florida radio stations.
Yeah.
Done.
And when somebody did ask the question, like, but also why?
Yeah.
They said, well, it interferes with aviation and public safety frequencies.
So this was the most pressing issue. The most pressing
issue in 98 in Miami. Yes. Let's not forget where drug cartels started in the United States. Right. And they said, you know what, we're not doing great on that front. So what we're going to go ahead and do, forget about the cocaine cowboys. We took out these radio stations, which Florida is saving Pirates your are life.
So much worse.
Saving your life. Because who knows, someday we might have to broadcast and say there's a national emergency. And you wouldn't get that if you were listening to a pirated
Florida is a national emergency.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, everyone who lives there knows that.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
I also just like to think about this guy that was, like, in charge of this mission and how much he built it up and, like, that he goes to barbecues now and is like, well, back in my day, you know, it was tough. We took down, like, 15 pirated radio stations in one raid. Let me tell you, that was a wild July. I mean, what?
And you know the other people at these barbecues where he shows up at, you know, they're just like, God damn it, Jerry's going to talk about this.
Why is Jerry here again?
I don't want to hear about the radio stations, Jerry.
No.
We heard the story, Jerry. We get it.
We get it. You were a big guy at the SCC.
And someone new to the barbecue is like, does Jerry have dementia? And they're like, no, this guy just really has a hard on for his FCC days.
And every time someone asks, he's like, aviation and public safety?
Yeah. Duh.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Also, just like to think about this in context of now that we can't seem to control or understand, like, misinformation or Russian bots. Like, our broadcasting, our social media channels, everything have just become sort of a free-for-all, and no one seems to be concerned at all.
No.
But back then, man, we took care of it. Man, oh man. And also, for the Federal Communications Commission to do this seems crazy, since you focused literally on one city in the entire United States. I could find no follow-up information about subsequent raids in other places. So
they were looking for, they were probably trying to justify themselves to Congress or something. They're like, look what we did. Mm.
It feels like what happened was Jerry lobbied and he got money for a special squad to investigate pirated radio stations, and he probably sold it like they were sending drug information. And then when he busted them, they were like, so what was it
just
again?
Some rave
kids.
He's
like, public safety.
aviation
public safety.
I also like the timing that this was the time the internet was starting to really blossom. Lots of chatting, lots of forums, things like that. But that's not important. No. That it's, let's go back to the analog days.
Yeah.
Let's focus on that.
Mm-hmm. And again, they weren't like broadcasting false information. They weren't saying like, oh, there's an emergency, and everyone was, you know, like there was no public safety concern. It was techno and dance music, which clearly is a very targeted audience that... Also, if you're a pirated radio station, you're not advertising. So it's just like word of mouth. It doesn't really... What's interesting is there was another case of this in California, in like the LA area, that they shut down a pirated radio station. And they actually sued for first, you know, rights amendment violations and won. Were able to stay on the air because they said that's not fair. Like,
Jerry,
you have
talk
this
about
system,
that one.
Mm-hmm. But we don't have to. Yeah. But the FCC was like, forget about that. Just remember, we'd shut down 15 in Miami specifically. So the rest of you are screwed with your pirated radio stations. But Miami's safe.
Oh, boy. What a good job.
Except
here.
For Will Smith. You didn't stop that.
This was Welcome to Miami era, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. And that might have been the whole heart of Jerry's mission. Maybe he just really liked that song. Was like, this is not fair. No one's hearing this great tune. All they're hearing is techno.
You know how some people, like, they go their whole life and they don't really know what they're here for? Yeah. I think Jerry had full awareness. Like, this is what I'm here. I'm put
this
on this
I'm
earth
to
do. He probably said it was God's mission. Mm-hmm. And now he's tormenting barbecue denizens everywhere.
Mm-hmm. This is also why no one likes FCC.
Right.
There's stuff like this. Like, you're not even trying. Mm-mm. That's not a win. You don't trot this out as a win.
No.
Especially when someone has to ask why. Like, if the FBI busts drugs, no one says, but why?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, when pirated radio stations, people have to ask why, you have to ask yourself, why did we do this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like there was a lot of, like, why in 1998. You know, this time around, I hadn't done some weird news in a while. So I looked for a little weird news, and I found that this was a weird year for dentists. So
what?
I'm going to dive into a couple stories about dentists, because we need some more fear of dentists in our hearts. Oh. I'm going to keep on, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. So in July, the Tennessee Supreme Court, it reinstated a lawsuit from a woman named Frances Blanchard. She was suing Memphis dentist Arlene Kellum. Mm. And the lawsuit said that Memphis dentist Arlene Kellum attempted to...
These names, I can't with Fran Bland and Memphis dentist.
The lawsuit said... The lawsuit said that the dentist tried to pull out all 32 of her teeth.
Oh, no.
In one sitting. What?
Oh, my yeah. God. This is my actual fear.
Right? So.
But why didn't she stop her? Why didn't she just get up?
Have you gotten to the dentist?
No, wait. There's more. There's more. So. Blanchard had gum disease.
Oh, okay.
So she said that she knew she was going to have some teeth pulled out, but she thought it was going to be over multiple visits. She probably didn't know it was all of them.
So she signed the form.
She was not paying attention. So the dentist was half done when Blanchard fainted and had to be hospitalized for 6 days.
What?
So which half were gone? Like the top half or the bottom half?
I was wondering the left half. I was wondering if the dentist was just doing like, you know, every other tooth for a while or like,
oh, that's an interesting idea.
I mean,
yeah.
So apparently they, you know, the lawsuit, it said that the dentist was at fault and the dentist appealed that decision. And the Supreme Court, full of people who hated dentists, apparently, because they were like, no, it stands. You are at fault. So the dentist got blamed.
That poor dentist had such a bad day. He's like, I'm getting sued. My favorite radio station got shut down.
I know.
Yeah, July was a rough month.
Damn it.
1998.
So that was Arlene Kellum, okay. Memphis mm-hmm. dentist.
That's now, like the rural juror.
That feels like a weird show on the CW. Memphis dentist.
Arlene Kellum, Memphis dentist.
Now we're going to move over to Oklahoma City.
Oh, boy.
And a patient named Mark Maxenti received $1.3 million because Ooh. He had brain damage from a dental appointment.
Oh.
Turns out his dentist, John Becker, went to sleep during an appointment and left Mark hooked up to nitrous oxide for about 10 hours.
10 hours?
10 hours.
$1.3 million is not enough.
I know, just straight up nitrous oxide for
How
10
is the dentist
hours.
Sleeping for 10 hours? So he had a cocaine problem or something.
He was on his period.
Thinking like, so did he just, it was like a late in the afternoon appointment. He forgot he was there and he just went home, went to bed, like everything. And then woke up in the morning. He's like, oh, fuck. And then
okay,
Mark
that's
was still
plausible.
There.
That makes sense.
That was my first thought, but I don't know. I like the period.
I just
period.
Went straight
like
passed
the,
out yeah. just sleep. And I'm like, he'll come to and you're like, oh, shit. I dozed off for a minute. You look at your watch, 10 hours.
Either that or it's a mad scientist situation. Like, they're just like, what can we do here with this nitrous oxide, you know? So, yeah, Oklahoma City said, dude, sorry.
Yeah.
You got to pay.
Yeah.
$1.3 million.
Not enough.
To poor old Mark, who apparently had brain damage but had enough, you know, brain still there to be like, that was wrong. That was not good.
Yeah. Okay. Well.
So I take all of this as further proof that dentists are terrifying and that we shouldn't go to them. And that, you know, it reminds me also of our friend Tammy telling us that dentists are all just about, what, like cocaine and whores? Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's so, I was just going to say, Mike and I watch so many, like, murder shows at night before bed and, like, American Greed and stuff like that. And the amount of dentists that are on those shows, like, selling teeth or, doing
selling
drugs.
Selling teeth?
Yeah, doing weird things out of the back of their dentist's office. Like, it is, I mean, we joke about it, the number of times it's a dentist. It's a lot.
It's not surprising.
But that story, I mean, it makes it feel like you have to. It's like when you go to the dentist, you have to treat it like you're going on a blind date. Like you have to like tell your friends, like, call me.
Yes.
Like call me a half an hour into this to make sure I'm okay.
And make sure I'm not hooked up to nitrous oxide for 10 hours.
Or tell the dentist, like, my friends know where I am.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
and also, how many teeth are you pulling out today? I want a clear number.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, listeners, moral of the story. Don't trust fucking dentists. Just don't do it.
Just across the board.
Don't go to dentists. That's what we're telling
you. Don't do it.
Don't worry
just
about it.
Just brush your teeth and it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Or do like I do and make an appointment and then reschedule it at least 5 times, or just don't show up and then have to go to a new dentist because you're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that as a plan.
Mm-hmm. And it was funny you bring up dentists. Like 2 weeks ago, a coworker just was like explaining that she had a dentist appointment the next day. It was just like, I think I'm going to cancel it. It's just a teeth cleaning. And I was just like, can you do that? Like, I scheduled mine like 6 months ago and I just feel like I gotta show up. Like, I don't, you know.
See, that's probably the normal reaction.
Yeah, I do not.
Mine is more of a trauma response of absolute panic the morning of and, you know, for days before my jaw is hurting. And yeah, nope, not gonna do it. So it's gonna be fine. It'll all rot and fall out. It'll be great.
It'll be great. It'll be great.
Yep.
Or you could go to that dentist and get them all pulled.
Yeah. Go to the Memphis dentist.
Memphis dentist.
Memphis dentist. What do you got for us, Heath? Final one.
In 1998, there was a televised music concert.
I knew you were going to do this one.
And it was called VH1 Divas Live.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I also, yep.
Yep.
It aired on April 14th, 1998, and featured performances by Celine Dion, Gloria Estefan, Aretha Franklin, Shania Twain, and my queen,
the queen,
Mariah Carey.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real Mount Rushmore talented singers, and Gloria Estefan was also there.
She broke away from the restaurants.
Yep, yep. Yeah, she put she'll have J-Lo's ex-husband in charge so she could go. She'd go to this concert. It was a benefit for the VH1 Save the Music Foundation, which was created to support music programs in schools because then as now, you know,
I was gonna say we need a Divas Live now. Yeah.
Yep. Throughout the concert, each singer performed solo and in various combinations with the other women. The culmination of the show featured all 5 singers as well as Carole King performing a group rendition of the song You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman, which was written by Carole King, and both her and Aretha Franklin kind of released popular versions of the song. And it's wild. I watched it the other day, and it's wild to watch it. That performance, because Mariah Carey and Shania Twain and Gloria Estefan wisely kind of take a step back while Aretha Franklin sings the shit out of the song, you know, as one does.
As you should, yes. Yeah.
Celine Dion does not follow suit.
Oh, that tracks. Yeah.
It almost seemed like Celine Dion was challenging Aretha Franklin a little bit to like sing it, out-sing it with her, I guess, maybe. But like in a good-natured way.
Was she high off her Titanic success at this point?
She was like, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Celine Dion was really singing her face off, but if Aretha Franklin would have pushed her off stage, I think everyone would have understood it. Mm-hmm. Like, we wouldn't really have questioned it.
Uh-huh. No.
The concert took place on the 86th anniversary of the night the Titanic sank.
Oh.
Yep.
Okay. Was that intentional?
I don't think so.
Good Lord.
But Celine Dion noted that when she performed My Heart Will Go On from the film Titanic.
Of course she did.
And it makes me wonder, it makes me wonder what all those people out in the ocean would have thought if they'd have known that 86 years after that boat sank, that a Canadian woman would be singing a schmaltzy ballad about them during a concert to raise money for school music programs. Would it have made it all worth it for them, knowing that their life was not lived in vain because it would someday lead to a kid learning to play the French horn?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
that's
so.
Profound.
I think, yeah,
that's I bet profound. Some of them would have been like, no, yeah. It does not make it worth it.
Those people are selfish.
Yeah. Billy Zane from Titanic
I was
not
say,
have
he's
made
like,
it.
Diva's live. Yeah. What?
1998 was just the first year for the Divas Live concerts, and it was by far, I think, the best. The 1999 version was pretty good. It had Cher and Tina Turner and Whitney Houston and Brandy.
Damn.
Elton John appeared as well, and he and Tina Turner kind of famously got into a shouting match during rehearsals.
Oh. Yeah.
Which I would have loved to have seen. Like, that would be great to be like, someone, a stagehand or something, like just watching Tina Turner and Elton John just shout at each other. In 2000, the show was billed as a tribute to Diana Ross, and Mariah Carey was back, but there wasn't much else notable about that. And after that, it was a pretty big drop-off in quality of performers, and by 2001, the Backstreet Boys and Kid Rock were on the list of headliners, and who the hell wants to see that?
What?
On Divas Live?
Yes. Just close down all the music programs already.
Yeah. Like, yeah,
that's what we're showing.
If we're up
kids.
Against Kid Rock, then yeah. we're done. Yeah.
I don't think Kid Rock's ever helped a child, and you can't convince me otherwise.
No.
They did a holiday version of the concert in 2016, and Mariah Carey was back again, and she opened the show with All I Want for Christmas Is You, but then she made the wise decision to head out for the evening, avoiding a closing number that I would describe as caterwauling for Jesus. And nobody wants to get shouted at by someone named Bebe Rexha on their birthday, not even Jesus.
So are they still doing it at all, or they just did it?
That was, I think, the last time
the
they
last
did
one.
It.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's wise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because really, like, what it started, it was, like, those were, like, the
those
top,
the divas.
Yeah. Like, the top singers of the time and stuff, and now, you know.
It's
you know,
harder to, yeah.
You're like, not going to get Taylor Swift and Beyonce to do this concert. You're just
whoa.
Not going to.
Whoa, could you imagine?
But if they did, Doug, I mean, we could fix all the music programs. We'd have enough
yeah,
money
we
for
could.
All of that.
Uh-huh. We could power the economy for the rest of time, maybe. I don't know.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Probably that combination would, like, somehow help us find the source of clean energy, and we'd have to, like, you know, we wouldn't have to,
good
like,
point.
Climate change would be solved.
Yeah.
We'd figure it out.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
I think it's, we're on to something.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we're manifesting it.
Maybe.
Ooh, maybe we
I
brought
like
it up.
I mean, we are powerful that way.
Kid Rock made me realize in high school that, oh.
Drugs are bad.
That. But also, one of my friends, a good friend of mine at the time, like, I remember specifically where we were, and she said, I have this huge crush on Kid Rock. She was obsessed with Kid Rock. And I remember calibrating inside and being like, oh, so there's not, like, a universally accepted hot guy. Like,
there's different
okay,
tastes.
Yeah,
okay, okay.
Yeah, okay. So that's interesting. All right.
So you're saying you fell firmly in the camp of not being attracted
no,
to Kid Rock.
No, not at all. Yeah. And I could not even get there. I mean, she tried to explain a few things, and I was like, I'm really stuck on the fur coat. I don't know. Uh-huh. I can't
and
get
just
there.
All of it.
Yeah, just the whole,
yeah.
the whole vibe. And she's a perfectly lovely person. I don't hold that against her whatsoever.
Yeah.
But
yeah. We all make mistakes.
Wow.
Anyway. All right. Well, in 1998, we had the first internet meme. Although we didn't have the words for it then.
Oh.
It was called the hamster dance.
The hamster dance?
Yep. I don't know if you remember this. It was created in 1998 by a Canadian art student on a GeoCities page.
Oh, boy.
And the dance featured just rows of animated GIFs of hamsters and other rodents dancing in various ways to a sped up sample from the song Whistle Stop.
Oh, boy.
Which was written and performed by Roger Miller in the 1973... Robin Hood, well, Disney Productions Robin Hood. And I saved it in my phone.
Oh my God, I do remember this.
Kind of the dee-da-dee-da-dee-da, that song from Robin Hood. And it's just rows and rows of hamsters turning around. It looks like something that, like, my 10-year-old would learn at coding camp in the summer or something.
Yeah.
But it... In 2005, CNET named the hamster dance the number one web fad because it was so popular. What's great about this is that it was just a competition with her sister to see who could create a more, like, basically viral before they had the words for that page. She called it Hampton Hamster's Hamster House because her own pet hamster was named Hampton. And she says that spelling Hamster House without the P was intentional. She wanted that.
Without the what?
Without the P. She spelled hamster without the P in it.
What P?
Hamster has a P in it.
Does it?
I thought so. Yeah. I assume it does.
Hamster? Like yeah. the animal hamster has a P in it.
Yeah.
Wait. No, it doesn't.
This is wild.
No, it doesn't. She says no. Hamster.
It doesn't have a P in it.
No. So then why did she make a deal about it being that she didn't put a P in it?
I thought you guys were seriously playing a prank on me for a minute. Like, wait, what?
That's wild.
Okay, so somehow this spelling with a P, enough people have seen this spelling.
Yes, because the hamster
said...
dance, if you look it up, is spelled with a P. But then she said spelling it without a P was intentional. Which in reality, spelling it with a P was intentional. Also, I'm really questioning myself that I did all this research and at no time did I question that there wasn't a P in it. So,
Jesus, we might have to cut that whole part out. Oh my
That'll
God.
Be our secret track.
Your secret track. Yes. What the fuck? Okay, anyway, P or no P, she said something was intentional, which is weird because she spelled it Hampton Hamsters. That hamster has a P. Hamster House has no P.
I mean, Hampton
right.
has a P in it.
And then she
and
spelled
then she put it
in
P.
the next hamster.
Okay.
Hampton Hamster.
This is great podcast right now. This is real
maybe
good stuff.
That's what she meant. Hampton Hamster is the name of her hamster. So maybe she put the P in and the Hamster House. I just must have messed that up.
I don't know.
Anyway. I mean, this is what she created. I don't know if we should go too deep on why she spelled things the way that she did. But in August of 1998 to March of 1999, it only recorded about 800 total visits, which is about roughly 4 per day. But in February of 1999, word of the website spread by email and early blogs. And by March, the site had gathered approximately 60,000 views in 4 days.
Dang.
And it even went on to be featured on bumper stickers and a television commercial for the internet provider Earthlink. They also, there was a bunch of like knockoffs of it created, one with Dan Quayle's face dancing at the time.
Oh, thank you.
So they consider that one of the first internet memes before we really had the language to understand what any of that meant.
You know what she's doing today?
Not spelling hamster correctly.
Did she make money off that? Like off the commercial and all that stuff?
I would assume.
I hope so.
Yeah.
But yeah. And she beat her sister in the contest to make a more
popular
webpage.
That's really all that matters.
Yeah. Which I'm sure is really what she wanted. Mm-hmm. My brain exploded on itself. By the way, I'm so glad that was the last one because I can't even function anymore between the P's and the P's and the no P's.
We really know how to make a good podcast. We're doing great.
I just am really disappointed in myself. That's what this whole thing comes down to.
Oh, boy. See, this is a learning podcast. We're learning from each other.
Are we?
Apparently. Something like that.
It feels like Amy was like, oh shit, I gotta save Aaron here. There's definitely no fucking being hamster. What I also appreciate is that Heath was like, I'm just gonna sit this controversy out.
It's like, I really don't care.
I don't care.
Yeah. Do you want to put a P in hamster or not? That's up to you.
It's like, listen, I was just talking about divas. Come on.
I'm pro-choice.
Such a good stepdad because you're gonna allow the the misspellings to just go.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was good.
Someday when Henry Cavill's in Hampton's Hamster movie.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I can't believe there wasn't actually. Now that you say that.
Yeah.
Maybe we should write one.
I think so.
Man, we're so good at this.
Mm-hmm. So good. So good at podcasting. It's crazy.
Well, it was a year. It's quite a year.
It was a year.
We learned a lot, had a few laughs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt like the embodiment of 1998, this episode did. Just did. Wild and all over the place.
Yep. Yeah. Good stuff, everybody.
Yeah.
Good job out of you, too.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you.
And you. Well, thank you.
And you.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Fuzzy Memories is a Broads and Books production. It's hosted by Heath Smith, Aaron Johnston, and Amy Lee Lillard. The show is produced by Amy Lee Lillard. Follow us at Fuzzy Memories Pod on Instagram for clips and highlights. And follow us at Broads and Books Productions for updates on new shows coming your way. See you next time.
I think also we could back up a little bit on that because I've never been to a dentist's office that only had one dentist and no hygienists.
Oh, right. Yeah. They just get their people around.
So, yeah. Like, maybe that's a red flag if you go in and he's the only one. Maybe that's not the time to get hooked up to nitrous. Like, could other people be present, please?
Yeah. I remember going to a dentist in Chicago where I think it was just him. And it was in, like, it was in, like, a the building that was nearby. I don't know why I would have gone to this dentist because I have a healthy, evidence-borne fear of dentists and jaw surgeons and everything. But somehow I think I was convinced, like, I need to go to a dentist and this guy works, you know. And the whole time he was talking to me about, like, pop culture and, like, Buffy and things. So during the time I was like, oh, cool, you know, he's distracting me. And then only later I was like, that felt like maybe a dangerous situation that I shouldn't have been in.
Yeah, it was just the two of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also a Will Smith song. Well, just the two of us.